to the effect that it was a pity that the best part of life came at the beginning and the worst part at the end. But trying the experiment upon only one man in a perfectly normal world, I have scarcely given his idea a fair trial. Several weeks after completing it, I discovered an almost identical plot in Samuel Butler's notebooks. The story was published in Collier's last summer and provoked this startling letter from an anonymous admirer in Cincinnati. Sir, I have read the story of Benjamin Button in Collier's, and I wish to say that as a short story writer you would make a good lunatic. I have seen many pieces of cheese in my life, but of all the pieces of cheese I have ever seen, you are the biggest piece. I hate to waste a piece of stationery on you, but I will. Tarquin of Cheapside. Written almost 60 years ago, this story is a product of undergraduate days at Princeton. Considerably revised, it was published in the Smart Set in 1921. At the time of its conception, I had but one idea, to be a poet, and the fact that I was interested in the ring of every phrase, that I dreaded the obvious in prose, if not in plot, shows throughout. Probably the peculiar affection I feel for it depends more upon its age than upon any intrinsic merit. Old Russet Witch. When it was written, I had just completed the first draft of my second novel, and a natural reaction made me revel in a story wherein none of the characters need be taken seriously. And I'm afraid that I was somewhat carried away by the feeling that there was no ordered scheme to which I must conform. After due consideration, however, I have decided to let it stand as it is, although the reader may find himself somewhat puzzled at the time element. I had best say that, however the years may have dealt with Merlin Grainger, I myself was thinking always in the present. It was published in the Metropolitan. Unclassified Masterpieces. The Lees of Happiness. Of this story I can say that it came to me in an irresistible form, crying to be written. It will be accused, perhaps, of being a mere piece of sentimentality, but as I saw it, it was a great deal more. If, therefore, it lacks the ring of sincerity or even of tragedy, the fault rests not with the theme but with my handling of it. It appeared in the Chicago Tribune and later obtained, I believe, the quadruple gold laurel leaf or some such encomium from one of the anthologists who at present swarm among us. The gentleman I refer to runs, as a rule, to stark melodramas with a volcano or the ghost of John Paul Jones in the role of Nemesis of melodramas carefully disguised by early paragraphs in Jamesian manner which hint dark and subtle complexities to follow. On this order. The case of Shaw McPhee, curiously enough, had no hearing on the almost incredible attitude of Martin Sulo. This is a parenthetical, and to at least three observers whose names for the present I must conceal, it seems improbable, etc., 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 until the poor rat of fiction is at least forced out into the open and the melodrama begins. Mr. Icky. This has the distinction of being the only magazine piece ever written in a New York hotel. The business was done in a bedroom in the Knickerbocker, and shortly afterward that memorable hostelry closed its doors forever. When a fitting period of mourning had elapsed, it was published in the Smart Set. Jimena. Written like Tarquin of Cheapside while I was at Princeton, this sketch was published years later in Vanity Fair. For its technique, I must apologize to Mr. Stephen Leacock. I have laughed over it a great deal, especially when I first wrote it, but I can laugh over it no longer. Still, as other people tell me, it is amusing. I include it here. It seems to me worth preserving a few years, at least until the ennui of changing fashions suppresses me, my books, and it altogether. With due apologies for this impossible tale of contents, I tender these tales of the Jazz Age into the hands of those who read as they run and run as they read. The Jelly Bean. Jim Powell was a jelly bean. Much as I desire to make him an appealing character, I feel that it would be unscrupulous to deceive you on that point. He was a bread-in-the-bone, dyed-in-the-wool 99.75% jelly bean, and he grew lazy all during jelly bean season, which is every